Welcome to Talking Comics. We have Jesse Kepler with us this week. Before we go into the comic stuff, tell us about yourself.
I have been a comics fan, I think, since I was like 6 years old. I was in a small upstate New York coffee shop, and I was like, there's this rack, and it's got books with pictures of robots in them. And I was like, I need these. I have those comics somewhere upstairs. But yeah, it was the old TV show Cops, but not, it's like C.O.P.S, okay, where they were futuristic cops and they had like robotic things that they rode. That was one of the first ones. And there was another one also with robots. I've always been like a robot guy. Transformers is huge for me. You can see like a little Unicron there. Ooh. That I got yesterday. And I've always been like really into storytelling. I grew up in the middle of nowhere. And so like eventually you run out of stuff to do. So you got to start making up your own games, your own stories, stuff like that. So me, my sister, my friends, we would go out in the woods and it would just be, you know, making up a world every week or so. And then we would play in that world. And then I'd be like, no, let's change it. Let's do this. So that's always been appealing to me. And when I was probably 11, I created Robo. And I started drawing it myself. And I have the originals here in the house. They're on construction paper and they're drawn awesome. With ballpoint pen on, you know, recycled stuff that was around. And I made, I think, maybe 12 or 13 of those.
Awesome.
And then a friend of my dad was dating a woman whose son was doing small press comics. And he sent me some of these. And I was like, oh, my God, this is really possible. Like, we can make our own comics. I got my friend who is a much better artist than me. And we did a 4-page, like, Robo comic to put into his, like, zine. He printed it for us, which is great. I wish I had a copy of that.
Right.
I don't have a copy of it. I've looked high and low, but, we were like, we can do this. Let's make an even bigger one. And then I found out how much it costs. So this is like 1994. I don't have a job. I can barely scrape together $2, you know, and the printing was going to be like $450. So that just killed the dream. And then I went and got my corporate tech job, and I lived many years of my life until the pandemic, where I'm sitting around and I said, I just want to do something that makes me happy. Like, this whole thing sucks. And I thought, and I was like, what made me happy? I loved making comic books. And that's that was what got me like up and starting to do it. It's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to use Robo again. I'm going to draw it. A day later, I said, I'm going to hire somebody else to draw it.
I had that same exact thing. I was like, I never thought I could draw my own. I knew I couldn't. I can do like a little bit of graphic design and that's about it. And, that's going to be part of this process of the documentary, right? It's like, I got to talk to so many people like yourself who are like, yeah, hire an artist. And they tell you good stories, tell you horror stories. And, you know, did you have any horror stories looking for an artist?
No. So good. I have a bad story, but it's not a horror story.
Gotcha.
But,
okay.
In general, I went to the Reddit comic book collabs area, which I had previously found in some of my looking around. And I went and followed some artist's guide. This is how you find a good artist. And he said, make sure you write that you're paid. Write about what your story is going to be about. Write about what you expect in terms of how it's going to get out there. And you know, he had a good list. So my thing was, you know, this is paid. It's a cyberpunk comic about this. It's got superhero elements. I intend to kickstart. It's going to be black and white. You'll be paid up front, etc. And for me, my criteria is you need to email me. If you communicate with me any other way, then I will assume that you can't read, which means you can't read my script, so I'm not going to work with you. And for the most part, that gets me much better artists.
There you go.
I get people responding to the Reddit. They're like, hey, here's my portfolio. And I'm like,
you didn't read.
Out you go.
Simple instructions. Half the battle is showing up, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, offering to pay and having like a clear idea has helped me a lot. I've definitely heard the horror story aspect. And yeah, I mean, you know,
knock on wood.
I won't pay anybody all of it up front anymore. I pay half up front.
Okay.
And half when you're done.
I did monthly installments, so over like 4 or 5 months, and you know, he would do a page a week, and I paid him like for the month, right? And then he'd give me a page a week, and then pay him for the next month, and it worked out phenomenal. I mean, knock on wood, it was a great experience that I would gladly go through again, right? It was amazing. Where did you grow up in upstate New York?
Cooperstown, basically.
Okay. Cooperstown. I grew up just outside of Elmira, New York.
Okay.
So
I not too far away.
Not too far away from there.
Not too close either. But
yeah, but just the same, like, you know, just when you say upstate New York, it's like, I know what that means. A lot of people don't know what that means.
Yeah, I get into these conversations, especially down here, when people don't know anything about New York State, and I'm like, well, actually.
Right. What he means down here is we're both in North Carolina.
There's Catskill. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's Finger Lakes area. There's so many upstates, but.
Right. It used to make me so mad when I was a kid too, because like, you're from upstate New York. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm 10 minutes from the Pennsylvania border. Like, you can't get further south in New York where I was unless you went 4 hours east to New York City, you know? <Yeah. laughs> So it was like,
with it. Yeah. So you clarify for people, we're both in North Carolina. For the listeners who don't know the pathos of New Yorkers, if you live in New York City, you say, I'm from the city. Or right. No, if you live in New York City, Manhattan is the city. If you are outside of New York City, then that's the city.
Right.
And basically the entirety of all of New York State revolves around that problem where people in Manhattan think that they're the most important, and it just sort of radiates out from there.
Yep. The rest of the whole big state is just upstate New York.
Yeah.
Even if you live in, like, you know, Peekskill, which is like 30 minutes north of the city, you're right in upstate New York. Yep. Which is crazy to me.
The only ones who get away with it is Long Island, because they're not up.
Right. They can't get further south in New York than Long Island. So. And they are south of the city, technically. But no, that's great. That's an awesome story how you started, you know, and then come back to it and, you know, revitalize the story. What was the inspiration behind it? Do you remember, like, originally?
I mean, I started with I love robots. So the early RoboComics, the 10-year-old version, is a lot of just robots punching each other, which was great. But one of the things that I was kind of really happy about, like proud of my younger self, was I went and I read through them and I was like, there's some bones for like a cyberpunk story here. Like the main thing about Robo is that he is owned by a corporation. He's a pilot of a mech suit or a super soldier suit, and he works for a corporation, and that I did not change. Whatever was in 10-year-old me's brain, he was like, you know what? A superhero that is a job was an important part of the role. And then at a certain point, like in Robo number 5, not that one, the one that I made as a kid, he loses his job. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's pretty dystopian. And so that's kind of, I didn't completely change it and keep the name. I kept a lot of the themes
in
the original and made them much more mature.
And you drew them when you were a kid though too, right?
I did. Yeah.
And then made the decision after one day not to draw them.
You know, they're not good.
That's my goal. Like, I would love to be able to draw one day. Mm-hmm. I haven't dedicated the time I need to yet. I would like to. My daughter is starting, the one you met, Annika, she's starting to she discovered the lady that was behind us Saturday. She had a little zine that she was, you know, she gave me one for Annika. And she's like, how did she make this? It's like one piece of paper. And I'm like, yeah, we can make them if you want. And I showed her how to cut it and fold it on Sunday. And she ran. My mom is a big crafter. So she has like scrapbooking stuff. And she has like a whole room, you know, for scrapbooking. And Annika has her own little table in there with all the stuff my mom's like going to get rid of. She just throws in a tub and Annika does stuff. Like she's very crafting. She ran to her room, the craft room, and she actually made her own zine and drew it and everything. That's awesome. The other day. And I was like, this is so cool. So I'm hoping she'll, I think she, cause her artwork is getting much better, like every year. I mean, she's only 11, right? So I'm hoping she sticks with it and she could actually really do something with it. I was, funny enough, president of my art club in high school, but I was more of a build, like I drew like architecture. I could never get like the people and the, I was never good at drawing the fruit basket or the people. Like I could draw a building, bricks, but that was it. So I'd love to get to that point one day. But at the same time, having that collaboration, because now you're collaborating. When I look at your book you sent me, you know, you have artists and letterers and, you know, the whole thing. What did you feel about that collaboration and working with others?
It's so good for me. I've always wanted to be a writer, and I've done a lot of writing, and I pay very close attention to it. I don't finish things very well. And one of the great things about collaborating on a comic, first of all, two things about a comic. I get to write something short and be done and keep doing it. But also I'm working with somebody else and they want to see it. They definitely read it. Sometimes they're like, hey, I think you should change these pages. But like, there's somebody else to be accountable for rather than me just sitting in this chair and being like, yeah, I think I'm done. And then come back to it 9 months later and be like, oh, well, I guess I better start over because like, it doesn't make sense anymore. So collaboration has been wonderful. And then there's like the joy aspect, especially with like the first Robo, is like, oh my God, this is my story. You made my story. I mean, I paid you to do it, you did it.
It doesn't matter. Like I went through that same thing. Like I paid him to do it, but getting those pages back, and I explained this earlier to Rob, but I've not met anybody yet in an interview like this that hasn't, you know, had the same feeling, but it's like, you get those pages back digitally. You know, he'd send me a message. I'd get the page and I'd be like awestruck that something that I wrote is now, you can see it. It's amazing. But then you take it the step further. And when I got to see it in print for the first time, like the actual interior pages in print, I was like shocked at how much better it looked in person versus digital. You know, it was just an amazing. And like you said, we pay him for it, but it doesn't matter. Like it still gets that amazing feeling.
Yeah. Well, you're ready. Okay. So, you know, you're always looking for the next dopamine hit. Let me tell you what the next one is.
All right.
When you get a book with a spine, you're like, oh man.
When you get the trade paperback version, you know, the graphic novel.
I didn't think it was going to affect me that much, but I was like, man, I love this thing. I think for the first 3 days, I just would open it up and flip through it.
So did you kickstart each one individually?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I've done 7 Kickstarters and I've got an 8th one coming up. So
this is the
black and white collection and I printed it. I printed it one time. There won't be another one. It's limited, you know, 75 copies to take to Baltimore Comic Con.
Sweet.
But the new Kickstarter is going to be this, but in full color, which nobody's seen before. And it looks so good. I know why I chose black and white. I know why black and white is important to me. Well, but I did not think that it could look that much better. I mean, it goes back to the story I was telling you. So my dad's friend's girlfriend's son you know, in 1992, sort of introduced me to the idea that there can be comic books that don't look like a Marvel comic.
Right. Okay.
And those comics are in black and white. You know, that was in my head, is an independent comic is black and white. Now, obviously, color printing is much cheaper and more accessible now. But
nowadays,
like,
yeah.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Cerberus, Love and Rockets, like all of the famous independent comics, the ones that changed the way that we think about what comic stories are, they were all black in black and white first. Walking Dead is black and white.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, yeah, in my mind, it was like, well, you got to do this first. You can't just jump straight to the art stuff.
Well, I skipped a step. Dang it.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I'm not going to hold it against it.
I appreciate that. That's phenomenal, though.
Yeah. When I started thinking about it, and I had this discussion with my sister a lot because she's an artist, and she was like, you got to do color. And I was like, I look at my shelf over here and I'm like, half of these comics that I love are black and white.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm a Thor fan. I think I told you that, and you can kind of tell from my background. I might like Thor a little bit, but I'm reading like all the old Thor. So these are all the old, like, this is Journey into Mystery 83 up until like 194, right? That I finished, and I got the other one over there, or the next one. But one of these books, I had to get the essential book, and it's all black and white. And it actually grew them. I did not like it to start with. I only had to read like four or five issues to like bridge a gap between two books that I could find. But like the first couple, I was like, oh, this is horrible. And then, by the third one, I was like, okay, it makes you, even reading yours today, earlier today. But I do find myself looking at the artwork more versus the color pages and stuff. So that does make sense. I never put that together until you just said that. So what made you want to go color now?
I mean, I did six Kickstarters for these comics already.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make a collection and kickstart it, but I wanted to offer something more for people. So that was important. I think it would also be like important for me to sort of grow my audience with color. As much as I love black and white, not everybody does. And a lot of people, I saw this even at Heroes Con last year, where they would be like, oh yeah, sounds interesting. Cool. You know, and you know, it just instant turn off for them.
Right.
And then
I can see that.
Yeah. It is now accessible to me. And I think one of the other things I've learned starting to do color is you can add a lot of mood in color that isn't available in black and white. And I think because I'm trying to do cyberpunk, it's important for people to be able to tell sometimes whether it's day or night. But if you're in black and white, and unless you're doing heavy blacks, you could be drawing a night scene and you don't want to black everything out. So now we get that. So that's kind of nice too.
So are you doing the coloring yourself? Do you hire a colorist? How's that? Tell us that process.
So this is the bad story.
Okay, here we go.
I hired one of my artists to do the color.
Okay.
Originally. And he did five and a half of the six issues, and then he disappeared. that's unfortunate. So I reached out to another colorist to get five and six recolored after it took me a while. It really bothered me. I was upset, and then I was angry. Anyway, I got over that, and I decided I still want to do color. So I hired a colorist to do five and six because I didn't want it to just jump suddenly.
Right.
He did such a good job, like really crushed it. Lautaro Fatilli is the colorist, and it's beautiful. So I was like, you know what, man, just go back and recolor 1 through 4 too. And again, I mean, he didn't miss anything. He did a great job with everything. The pages look beautiful. So now he is also working with us on number 7. I hope to continue working with him as long as I possibly can until he gets too famous.
Right? Now, yeah. The original issues 1 through 6, did they come out color or they were just black and white to start?
They were black and white.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was the reason. I didn't want to charge people who already owned them again without giving them something
extra. Okay. Now, issue 7, are you going to go back to black and white or are you going?
We're going color from the start on 7.
Color from the start, not 2 versions?
I could maybe do 2 versions. That would be an interesting extra. The art for 7 is done. Lautaro is coloring it now. Yeah, Jake might like that. My new artist, Jacob Dudek, he did this one here that you can see.
Yeah.
We did a book in between 6 and 7 with one of my side characters.
Okay.
That book is called Shuja the Discriminator. I didn't send you a copy of that one, but
no.
It's Groundhog Day meets the Matrix, essentially.
Ooh, okay.
But we did color for that one, and that was my test flight to see, do we get a bigger audience with color? And I think it paid off.
You did it was get my a bigger, biggest goal. Okay.
Yeah.
How many people that liked the black and white stuck when you went to color? I mean, do you think you can retain some or did you just gain a whole new audience?
That's a tough call. So like I said, when he disappeared, it was kind of hard on me because we had been working together for more than a year. So there was kind of a gap.
Right.
I think I lost some of my audience just because I hadn't put out any comics for a year and a half. But no, I wouldn't say that anybody, there are people who have stuck with me from number 1. Who I don't know, and I think they like
that's
it.
That's awesome.
I don't think anybody said, please go back to black and white.
What? So all your Kickstarters were successful. How much did you ask for on your first one?
On the first one, I think the goal was 1,700 or 1,800. We did 2,250, which was amazing.
Yeah.
The second one was a little bit of a dip. I asked for the same amount. I think we did 1,800. So it was just over by about $100. And then steady growth. 3, 4, 5, and 6 all came out within probably about a year and a half.
Wow.
And that was really
That's
good.
Cranking them
I
out.
Saw growth. Actually, I made $20 on Robo number 5.
All right. You made a profit.
Which is incredible.
Profit,
if you've made indie comics, you know that making money is unheard of.
Yeah. I'm just happy to have some cash flow now with selling the comic and stuff. I'm not making money, but I have cash flow, which is huge. Because before, there was no cash flow. And that was a big reason, too, why I wrote the comic and wanted to do it. There's 100 reasons why. But another one was, I come from the world, I told you before we started, I had a little game store. And when I sold the game store, I turn it into miniature games accessories, and I'd go to conventions like gaming conventions, and I'd have a booth and sell, and it was to make money, and I'd make my money back, pay for the, I wasn't living off it, but I could have a fun weekend and come home with a couple bucks in my pocket. But with the podcast, I wanted to do conventions, like last weekend, and there was nothing to I had to really turn my head to think about, man, this is a marketing expense, not a make money expense, right? This is to gain fans for later. And the comic kind of just helps me, make a couple bucks and have a cool project to talk about. Yeah, we sold 11 last weekend, so that was pretty good.
That's great.
We had 7 the first show and 11, so I'm happy. We've sold I think it's a total of 69 books through the Kickstarter, so that's pretty good, I think, for a first comic and first start and getting it out there, and I can't wait to do the next one. Hopefully I'll make a little bit more money, and that's all I need it to do is just I need this book to pay for the next book. That's all I wanted to do.
That's always the goal. And you know, that's kind of a thing about like going to color is like, I have been very lucky. Like it's a lot of friends and family who 100%. Provide like at least half of the funding. So that's, I really appreciate that. But I've also been lucky to get some actual people to continuously support me that I don't know.
That is the weirdest thing to me. Like I've had some people that backed for no reward, and that's just crazy to me. Like it's people I know through in the comic world, and they're doing it just to support us because they like what we're doing. But it's like, I don't know. It's hard for me to wrap my head around, you know, somebody's going to give me just money just because I'm doing something, right? Like it's nice. It's just, I mean, I guess it makes you feel validated, right? That you're doing something good that people want to support. But it's just crazy to me. So
when I did Robo number one, the comic Berserk, one with Keanu Reeves was kickstarting, and it made like $8 million or whatever. But that was Boom Studios was running that Kickstarter.
Right.
And they gave me $100 on my campaign.
Heck yeah.
For no reward.
Is that not
really
crazy?
Really, really nice. Like they just kind of spread the wealth around a little bit.
I've asked a couple of them. I'm like, hey, you know, not that I'm complaining, but why did you do that? Like, you know, at least get one book. I mean, if you want to donate more, sure. But I had said I'm already sent it digitally to them. But, you know, they're like, we want to support the indie community. You know, we've made it or whatever, and we want to help you grow and the community grow. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. But it's just crazy to me that I don't know.
Nobody gets into comics to get rich.
Right. But I hope I can return that one day, right? Or repay that one day, you know, throughout the community. And I try to support, you know, I'll support yours. I hit the notify me on launch today. So
thank you.
I know how important that is now.
It is. I was not aware of it either until conversations that I started to have with more successful people. And they were like, you got to get as many followers before you launch, because then Kickstarter knows that you're worth boosting.
Gotcha. What other advice about Kickstarter would you give people? Being a veteran of 8 different Kickstarters or 7.
Hopefully 8. The 8th will also be successful.
I'm sure it will.
Let's see. Video is more important than I thought. I did a couple without a video, but people have really set me straight on that. It doesn't have to be a great video, but for people who don't want to read all the text that I write, being able to hear what I say is important. I try to give a couple of sample pages. I don't know if those are super helpful or not, but I don't think I've ever seen a campaign without them.
Okay.
Just to let people know that the art's there. Much like you said, you have the book in hand.
Right. I put a couple pages up.
I set my goal pretty modestly, I feel like, for the actual cost. Like, I'm not looking to make money on Kickstarter.
Right. That was a huge debate I've had, and I've tried having this conversation with a couple of actual marketers that help people on Kickstarter and comics and stuff. Because I only set my goal for $500. Because yes, I wanted it to fund. No, yes, I want to sell it and spread the book out there. But like I said, I had the book already. So whether I got a dollar or $0 or $10,000, the book's here, right? Yeah. I'm going to the shows. So I was really struggling with, should I just put $500 just to hope somebody, you know, backs it? Hopefully that's a low enough goal somebody would fund, right? Like I think we're at 740. So I'm like, okay, I'm good. You know, we're over. You know, I didn't want to put like $3,000 with, you know, to make my next one. That would have been awesome. But then I'd be sitting here at 740 freaking out with one day to go and not get anything. Right. And so I don't know what the balance is for that, you know?
So that's it. Yeah. Like my advice or my method of set it conservatively is probably not the advice that you would take. I think the guy, I wish I could remember his name because I met him and he was so nice to me. But the guy who wrote Metal Shark Bro from Image Comics, they raised a fairly large amount of money on Kickstarter before he got picked up by Image. And his advice was that I should be baking in all of my time as a writer at an hourly rate or a page rate or whatever and make sure that I included my pay in the goal. And I was like, well, that would increase the goal a lot because I'm also the letterer. And I think if you have a little bit of an audience or a little bit of a reach, then that is what you should do. You should ask for enough to cover everything.
Right.
I'm still pretty small time. And also I have a good day job. I want, like you want, I want to see enough money come in that this isn't an obscenely expensive hobby, but I'm happy to keep selling these at conventions, make a few hundred bucks at a time before I ever break even.
Right.
And if I start to have to do 6 issues a year or something like that to meet a publisher's goals, then I'm going to start being like, okay, well, I need to get paid.
I think that's a fair way to look at it. Because I was feeling bad for myself. Like, did I make a mistake only asking for 500? I don't know. I don't think so. Because, like, if I can make 700 bucks off Kickstarter, a few hundred bucks out at a couple, a few conventions, a couple hundred bucks off the website sales or whatever, okay, I've made my money back. It'll pay for the next one. And I mean, I'm okay with that until I get that following. I had 10 people on my pre-launch, right? I was excited to get 10, nice. Right? Before I launched. But I think that's a good way to look at it, build that following. Yeah. Then you can start, okay, now you want me to write this. You want this book? Now you're going to pay for it, right? Kind of thing.
Well, the other thing I would say is think about it from Kickstarter's perspective. They take 8.5%.
Yep.
And they also hold your money for 2 weeks. So they're doing some, high interest loans or whatever.
Right.
If you're Brandon Sanderson and you're making $15 million on your book's Kickstarter, then Kickstarter is going to help you succeed because they want that 15%.
Right.
Comics won't get that far unless you're Berserk with Keanu Reeves. But like when you start to want a bigger following, you do want a bigger goal because that 8% is juicier to Kickstarter. They have more incentive to help you get seen. As all of those numbers get bigger.
Makes sense.
Then you want them to make sure you're covering your cost. And then there's shipping. Which how I'm going to price shipping in,
right?
Because the cost of shipping things, the barrel of oil is going to change dramatically from start to finish. So yeah, that's another one where you kind of want to overshoot your goal because some of your costs may go up.
One of the things that I actually did this morning, I was working on the pledge manager that's going to start, when it ends. Because I got, almost, 20% in just donation money, right? I just decided to make just a $5 flat shipping. Like the donation money is going to pay for other people's shipping, right? Just to make it easier. Lower the projected shipping a little bit, right? I still don't know how that's going to work. So I didn't know they were holding my money for 2 weeks until you just told me. I probably should have read an article on that. But at least 2 weeks. Okay. That's fine.
They say it's like 4 to 14 days or whatever, and it will be the
14 business days or days. Okay. That's fine. I'll figure that out, but I didn't want to charge exorbitant amounts, but man, figuring out shipping's hard. That's one of the hardest things.
Yeah. So I have when I ship these out from my website, cause I didn't kickstart the black and white copy.
Okay.
I have a Gemini mailer. Those cost 75 cents a piece. I think the shipping itself is about $6 right now. And then there's the book. So I charge people, I think, $6. I don't charge them for the Gemini, even though it is almost a dollar.
Right.
But yeah, if I do the Kickstarter, and it really takes off, and I'm leaving that dollar to two for shipping on the table for each book.
It adds up.
It can add up.
That is, yeah, it's insane.
And that's another Brandon Sanderson thing, you know, because he's the all-star of Kickstarter when he did his first book on there, as it really, really blew up. And they didn't have a place to put all the books. He tells a story on his podcast. He's like, yeah, our first book on Kickstarter sold, you know, however many tens of thousands of copies. I didn't have a warehouse. So he just had them filling his entire house, his garage, his friend's house, their basement, like, and they were doing everything they could to get the books out of the way fast enough so that the people who were lending them their homes could have their house back. So, you know, I don't ever think that I will be so successful as to take up multiple homes worth of product, but there are logistical things that pop up, especially as you gain success.
Gain success, yeah. Hopefully at that point I would be able to rent a warehouse for a week or two, or a big interior storage shed or something to have all those books. That would be an amazing problem to have. Those good problems, right? We'll get there one day. I've got some fun questions, but before that, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you want to talk about?
I think one of the things I'll plug the book a little bit.
Of course, please do plug the book.
It is a cyberpunk story, and it deals with like themes about technology influencing our lives, but also like how, you know, in cyberpunk worlds, everybody works for a corporation. Corporations control everything. And one of the big themes, especially because of when I was writing it during the pandemic, is disposability. Said earlier, like Robo gets fired in the childhood version. That's because even a superhero is disposable when all that matters are profits. Yeah, this guy isn't fulfilling exactly what we want. Just get rid of him. So I try to have some social commentary. I try to have technology commentary, and I try to put a lot of interesting stuff into the books. I've always wanted to make a comic, or I always like to read comics that have a really good story. So I hope that everybody finds that it is a really good story when they read it.
I agree. I think it does. I read the first one. I thought it was great. I'll have to finish it. When can I get one of those hardcover paperbacks?
You can get it. I mean, if you want the black and white one, you can get it.
Or wait for the right now. Kickstarter.
If you want the color, you can get the Kickstarter.
Got to go on the Kickstarter. I'll wait for the Kickstarter. We'll see. Okay. I'll back the Kickstarter, support you. Do you have a rough timeline of when you're going to launch?
I am probably going to launch at the end of this month, maybe the third week of April.
Okay. So coming up soon.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
Go hit that notify me on launch button. I'll have links in all, you know, to places below, above, wherever they are. Well, cool. I will, we'll start with these and then we can wrap it up. But I ask these questions to everybody that comes on the show. So I get some cool answers. Who was the first favorite superhero or comic character that you like?
You know, I think I thought of this answer because I was watching one of your episodes.
Ah, people are starting to cheat on this stuff.
It's
fine. I don't care. The first time that happened, I was like, wait, he actually watched an episode. This is cool.
I think I got to say Iceman.
Iceman. All right.
I liked X-Men a lot. Mm-hmm. And I was realizing when I was thinking about it, Iceman was also in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which was my first Marvel introduction.
Okay.
So Iceman's my guy.
Love it. Do you remember the first comic book you ever read? You might have already touched on this.
Yeah. So I mentioned the two. And I wish I could remember the title of this, but it is a little bit like Robo. It's a futuristic, like, robot core of people, and they, you know, they have some sort of mission that they're on. And the cover is like a tribute to it's a tribute to Grant Morrison's Animal Man cover, the really famous one where he's taking the Jesus pose. So it's this guy, he's attained all the powers of the other robots, and he has ascended into some sort of godhood. That was the one that I forced my mom to buy me at the coffee shop.
The coffee shop. I love it. It is crazy. We didn't have a lot of comic shops growing up in upstate New York.
Get them on the spinner rack.
Yep. That's where I've got my first comics. If you could live in any comic book universe, which one would you choose?
Shelf here.
I love that.
God, a lot of these are really terrible places to live. I might go with Paper Girls, because on the shelf I've got The Walking Dead, Why the Last Man, like all really terrible right. places
Nowhere
to live.
Nowhere I want to be.
Yeah. No, I'm going to go with Daniel Warren Johnson's Transformers.
Okay. I like
that.
They're
giant robots. The people don't get wiped out.
Right. They're usually protected. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. Transformers. That's a new one. I've had Peanuts and Garfield as like the mild ones, right?
Oh, I screwed up. I should have picked one.
No, you're fine.
Calvin and Hobbes. Give me Calvin and Hobbes.
Right. Calvin and Hobbes. But yeah, just sitting around with a giant cat eating lasagna. That's the world for me, right? Uh-huh. No, but Transformers. I like that one. I want a bumblebee car that turns into a robot and protects me.
Yeah.
If you could have any superpower, what would you choose?
Healing factor.
Yeah.
I used to always pick flight and then I turned 40. Healing factor.
That's a good one. Yeah, once we turn 40, yeah, healing factor would be good. We're not young anymore, are we? Which comic book character, any character, doesn't have to be a sidekick, but what would you choose to be your sidekick?
To be my sidekick?
Yeah.
I'm going to choose... I think there are better choices to game the system, but I'm going to choose somebody that is two sidekicks. Doug Lock.
So okay.
X-Men Warlock and Cypher, when they merge together to become Doug Lock, that's who I would like.
I like that. Sidekick. Most people pick like Superman or Flash because they can like get them out of any situation.
Right.
You know, but no, I like that. That's you thought about that one.
Yeah.
And this is my favorite question. If your life were a comic book, what would the title be?
Is he ever going to learn?
I like that. I have a whole list of... So what I've started doing is... I started with these questions, right? But then I started to get repeat guests. And I can't ask these same questions to a repeat guest. So look forward to when I have you back on. You're going to get a new set of questions.
All right. Okay.
That might tie to this set of questions. So keep in mind.
Well, I like that. That's a, you know, like a little, they did this on Whose Line Is, or not Whose Line Is Anyway.
That's a great show.
Make Some Noise, the online Dropout TV series.
Okay.
Where they had people do the test and then they had them back 3 weeks later to do the same test to try to beat their score.
I like that. The episodes each week I do with my daughter is a lot like Whose Line. Everything's made up and the points don't matter because she assigns random points to our games that make no sense, but she has a great time doing it. But yeah, that's one of the things I've done it once so far. I've had a couple repeat guests, but I wanted to do the questions. I had to come up with a new set of questions because I like asking the questions because it sparks some cool conversation. But tell people where to get your books now.
Okay, so if you cannot wait for the Kickstarter, you can get books off of my website. It's www.moosecatcomics.com. And I've got my Square store is linked off of there. It's in the top right corner. Just buy comics.
Sweet.
And then, of course, Kickstarter is coming up. I will have available all of the previous issues, either as add-ons or as part of bundles.
Okay.
And you can get the new colored version. If you don't want to use the internet, I will be at Heroes Con in June in Charlotte. You can come to the table. We can talk. you can buy them from me in person. You can pay cash, you can pay card, you know, all those. But
do you have any other conventions coming up or just Heroes at the moment?
This year I am going to Heroes and Baltimore, and okay. I'm going to try to figure out a third one, but it probably won't be a big one at this point.
Well, let me know.
I applied for C2E2, but I didn't get in.
There's a couple I didn't get into as well. I had to fight to get into one because the one I'm going to in Traverse City, Michigan at the end of May, and I had to fight to get into it because they didn't want to accept me. But then when I told them that my book was printed in their city and that another friend of mine works for the convention, they had to let me in. So they did find a spot for me. So I was excited.
The last place I guess you could get it is I'm going to be doing Free Comic Book Day at Yellowbird.
At Yellowbird.
Fuquay.
Okay.
Yep. And if you don't have any money, I have these bootleg copies that I printed in zine format of Robo Number 1. I'll be giving those
out
for free.
That's awesome. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I have to give... I will try to get up there that day. I'm supposed to be at another shop that day set up with my books. Somehow I'll figure out how, depending on the timing, how all that all works out, but I'll get there eventually. If not, I'll have Rob grab me one. one of the bootleg ones.
One of my favorite stories of recent time is my HVAC repair guy saw the stack of these in the house while he was working. He's like, can I take one of those? And I was like, yeah. And he read it. And then he came back the next day and he's like, I think I'm going to get the rest of them. And I was like, all right. So I feel really good about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a nice segue. He also pointed out, so embarrassing. So, you know, you're talking about how your daughter was learning how to do the fold and all of that. I had to fix the pages for double-sided printing and fold over. And I put two pages out of order. So he came back and he was like, hey, did you know that these two pages are out of order? And I was like, oh, dude. No, I gave out like 30 of these at Heroes Con last year.
No.
I hope people didn't read them and think this guy can't write.
This guy's an idiot. No. Did you fix them or are you?
I've fixed almost all of them now.
Okay, so, that's good.
I fixed the template. They won't print that way anymore. It was just very embarrassing.
And that's exactly why I went to the comic shop, the print shop, you know, because doing all that back and forth through like the, you know, mail would have taken weeks, but we were able to sit there just one day and knock it out. They were gracious enough to let us, you know, sit there all day and be like, we need to change this or change that or flip this or whatever. You know, we were able to fix everything and line up pages. That was so cool. Being, you know, if we had a double page, you know, and it would be just off just a little bit and we could adjust it. It was perfect. And
yeah,
you know,
and that was one of the things I was going to say before. You were talking about you videoed that process.
I did. Yep.
One of the really useful things that I think you could release, you know, maybe not as a podcast episode, but as like an explainer thing, is it was hard for me to understand the bleed and the trim line and all of those parts of the printing process when I first got started. I was very lucky that the letterer that I hired for Robo Number 1, before I learned how to do lettering myself, he had been through all different parts of the process. And he sat down with me one day on a call and he was like, listen, you've got art that doesn't meet the bleed here. You've got stuff here. Like, you know, it all has to be changed. Phil, who works digitally, didn't actually know where the bleed line was either. So he helped us both figure it out. That stuff is not, it's not intuitive.
It's not.
You don't just know it.
You don't. It's, you know, there's programs now that'll help you. But even then, until you see it on paper, you know, it's just those little things. Like, you know, they could be just shifted just a hair and you don't know if you don't print it. And but you just said something cool. You learned how to letter. What do you mean by that? How did you learn to letter yourself?
So I was not working when I did Robo Number 1 and 2. It was in the middle of the pandemic. I hadn't worked in a while. People weren't hiring, and I made some money back, but I was really trying to cut costs. So right. I said, I think I can learn how to do lettering and save. It was $10 a page was what I was paying. So I did. And the first printing is not so great. I've went and fixed it all now, and it's okay. Excellent. Or it's up to my standards. I don't know about excellent. But for the color collection, number one and number two, I re-lettered those to make sure that all the lettering looks the same. And I use a non-standard program. I use a free open source vector art program to do my lettering. It's similar to Adobe Illustrator, which a lot of people use.
Right.
But I had to learn to do it kind of from scratch because there's no tutorial for that. And so to keep track of my bleed, I have this box that is the bleed amount, and it's 50% transparency. So I drop it on the page and I make sure nothing's near it.
Exactly. Nothing's near it. We had that same issue. I mean, I had to tweak some pages and panels, and I did a little bit of the lettering. My artist did most of the lettering, but then like, I didn't want to send it back to him to like fix like some typos. So I just got the font that he used, and I fixed, you know, like just a few boxes here and there. And, yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun to letter and do that. I don't know if I'd want to do the whole book, but cause I, you know, like reading yours, like you have the cool bubbles, you know, that go together, and you know, like, I'd mess
that up.
I'll
show you. Let me find some of my pages that are. I also stream my lettering usually during the campaign so that I have a way to be like accessible for a while and talk about the book. One of the things that I really like when lettering is that I really, really dig into the page because you're staring at it for about an hour and you're getting real close. So you notice all the little bits. All right. This probably won't come through super well, but these letters behind this explosion, I added. They're not in the artwork.
Wow.
So for that, it was like a fun challenge. I had to make the letter, stretch it out, and then I had to go into the art and cut out the shape to cut out of the lettering to make it look like
it's not like you had the, you know, digital artwork to just put it behind the layer, right?
Yeah.
So I went through that when I made the t-shirt I was wearing, the Thor shirt.
Yeah.
Because it's based off this cover right here, and the little green stone man, I, you know, copied and pasted, kind of moved them around, tweaked them. But the one that was that's behind the cape, all that's there is like a leg and like a hand, right? It's all you see in this picture. And it just didn't look right on the shirt. So I just got rid of them, and I wanted to move them or something. And I sent it to a friend of mine. He's like, well, just pull it out so you can see the whole thing. And I'm like, it's not there. Like, it's only a hand and a foot. Like, that artwork doesn't exist behind, like, it's not a layer behind, you know, it doesn't exist when he drew it. Like, he only drew the hand and, you know, so that was pretty funny. He thought I could just, he's in a digital world, right? So he thought I could just pull it
right.
You know, oh, the whole thing's right behind his cape. I'm like, no, it's really not there.
My artist is watching this episode. He's going to be like that invincible meme. He's gonna see what they have to do to match even a fraction of our power.
Exactly. I'm getting the guy that did that cover. I'm getting to meet this weekend. I'm so excited in person. He's going to be at South Carolina Comic Con.
Awesome.
So I'm going to go meet him in person and give him his copies of his books. And I got a whole box of stuff for him. So shirt, whatever. Dude, where do you stream? What's your socials?
Last time I'm Moosecat Comics everywhere.
Okay.
Blue Sky, Reddit, Instagram, and Twitch is where I end up streaming for my lettering.
Okay. Very cool.
All the same username everywhere.
Sweet. I will definitely have to check that out. And I'll follow you on some of the socials if we don't already. I think we might, but I don't remember. I have to go back.
We have Instagram.
We have Instagram? Okay.
Yeah.
Are you on TikTok?
I am not.
You're not. Okay. So TikTok or Instagram is where we'll be, which is fine. Well, cool, man. Well, I will put all these links in the description below. I'll edit the episode and get it out probably in a week or so. Actually, I might do 2 weeks and wait until you launch and then release it. So if you're watching this now, go back the Kickstarter right now. And please. And yeah, well, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it.
AJ, thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure meeting you last week in person, and this has been a really fun time. I can't wait to come back.
Awesome, and that will happen. So maybe when you get done with the Kickstarter and get ready to like launch or submit, we'll get you on.
We don't just talk about comics. We made one.
And it's called The Chronicles of Pam Feet.
At Talking Comics, we interview creators, show off our comic calls,
play fun games, and show what we're learning firsthand.
Get a free preview of The Chronicles of Panel P by subscribing to our Substack.
Watch the trailer and all the video episodes on YouTube.
Or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Follow along, like, subscribe.
Trying to start a podcast but feeling stuck? At Aquatio, we help creators make waves with everything you need to bring your voice to life. Hosting, recording, editing, and marketing. Whether you're starting from scratch or just need a little help polishing your sound, we're here to hydropower your creativity. Comment on this video or DM us today and let's dive in.